Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to Morning Footy. Big news coming out as Pro and MLS have ratified a new CBA that will run through 2030 after a weeks-long lockout. Joining us now to talk more about it is our rules analyst, Christina Uncle. Christina, at long last, we've reached this point. What is your reaction to this finally getting done between MLS and Pro?
So at long last is a great word to use, and kind of like anything, when you come to a mediated settlement agreement, nobody's happy ultimately, which means it's a good settlement agreement because not everyone's going to get their way. So this is a 7-year agreement for essentially a collective bargaining agreement between the Professional Soccer Referee Association, PSRA, and their BU1 unit group, which is a bargaining unit one agreement that is essentially all referees from the center, assistant referees, and the VAR unit that are working this Major League Soccer. Kind of a bit of an unprecedented month-long lockout that occurred. Many of the referees naturally advocating for more fair pay, as well as for conditions that allowed them to travel to games. One of the highlights is naturally a bit more of an increase in the salary, which there's some distinctions there to be made, because prior to, the referees used to get paid per game out of the gate. Now they will have 15 games essentially baked into their salary. But that being said, there's some benefits there. And unfortunately for the referees, they did not get the increased travel accommodations. So that will be something that is a little bit of a sticking point for the refs. But it's a way to move forward for both the referees as well as the league.
And Christina, I'm sure a lot of the folks you know that are other referees are relieved at this point to be moving forward. But there's a point that you've brought up a couple of times on the show where you've mentioned the lack of depth within the refereeing pool. There's not as many new people coming into the game to be referees. And two, we've seen what some of the potential backups could be, and there's a lot of development, I think, needed. Do you think this new deal might relieve some of that, might welcome a few more referees into the game? And if so, do you think this deal will create a situation where maybe we can expect a higher level of refereeing?
Yeah, so I think what was very, this is the first time, and you know, everyone uses the word landmark deal. Well, every CBA is going to be, with all due respect, landmark deal, because it's supposed to always be better than the next. But that being said, is this is the first time that the BU1 group had the support and the actual association of what they call the BU2, which is the Bargaining Unit 2 group, and those are the referees that have officiate USL Championship and NWSL games. So this is the first time in history that there has been support by the lower division, meaning up-and-coming referees, for those fights that the first division is essentially having. That being said, this is the first time in first case impression, because referees underneath the BU1 and BU2 groups are not technically employees. They're all independent contractors and receive a license of their own through U.S. Soccer's Federation and have to climb through the U.S. Soccer Federation referee development program, which is a completely separate entity. So one of the biggest highlights for that for majority throughout is that fact of the solidarity. The majority of the referees held the line very proud. I served as the state referee administrator of Florida, that pretty much 95% of the Florida referees who were asked said no. So it shows that there is a path forward, that through unity, there's strength. So it's going to inspire that next, basically the third generation referees, to know that they have a group that they can feel confident that when they increase the line, when they begin to advance as referees, it won't be as subjective in the sense of, you know, when they get to a certain level that they won't get cut just because somebody doesn't like them, right? It's still going to be based on performance. So I think that does inspire those who are looking to climb the highest ladders and just look for job security, because historically it wasn't. You had to work two jobs, three jobs, and add refereeing to the list of things to do, which is incredible because you're refereeing professional athletes day in and day out, and you have to have the fitness standards that are equal to, if not better than, the professional athletes you're refereeing. But where it really is going to grow into our pipeline is these youth organizations throughout the United States, not just saying no zero tolerance for referee assault and abuse, but actually putting financial resources and programmings. There are some youth organizations that are doing so, but it needs to be at a bigger impact.
Hi, Christine. I want to continue on that topic of having more referees come into the situation. And in MLS, the players had something similar happen to this. And MLS brought in replacement players. And when that was finally dealt with and done and everything was signed, there was a lot of animosity towards those players. And the opportunities for those players that they thought they were going to get didn't materialize. How do you see this happening with the referees?
Yeah, and it was quite unfortunate. Many of those replacement referees that did decide to accept it, each one had a different story as to it, you know, as to why they did accept those assignments, whether it was because they knew they weren't going to get into the league. So it was kind of a little bit of a one and done, like, you know, here's my limelight. There's that certain group of referees who were very apparent about it when asked, you know, why would you undercut the legs of the, you know, the referee group? And then there were other referees who either felt obligated to individuals that they had to, that they owed them something to be able to say yes, and or really thought that this was their chance to get into the league. And, you know, there's nothing that's foreclosing that opportunity. So I don't want that to be the chatter that they may or they may not. It's just a matter of, historically, in the past, in the first lockout, there were some referees that were eventually able to make the league because the referees were not organized and unionized at that point, more collectively as before. But there's a lot to be said about many of these referees who still want to climb in, that you still have to put in the work. You still have to attend these seminars and have these the replacement referees did not have to meet the fitness requirements or the training and the development requirements. So to get to these highest leagues, it's not something that you just roll up and you pull your cleats out of the back of the car. So, you know, collectively, we always wish referees to do well. There's never an indication, because if you wish a referee not to do well, that means safety of the players. And that's obviously everyone's number one concern. But moving forward, many of these replacement referees are just counting this as kind of their time to shine and have a moment and then call it a day.
Christina, what have the refs that were on strike, what have they been up to over these last couple of months?
A lot of sourdough bread baking, or?
No, I can confirm in my household there was no sourdough bread making. That for a fact, I can confirm with one of the referees. And that being said, but no, I'm actually really proud of many of these the referees that were, you know, were essentially, just to refresh everyone's memory, is when a lockout occurs, you are terminated from your employment. So all of these officials did lose their salaries, they did lose their health insurance. So many of them, you know, it's not that they picked up another job, but they were giving back to the referee community. They were available because they weren't working a professional schedule to go back and referee at the youth levels and to mentor and to give back to certain state referee committees that reached out to them. So really proud of the majority of them who went out and, you know, educated quite many. Going back to, you know, Alexis's point, went back and they gave back to that next growing group of referees to say, like, hey, we're kind of in a pinch, but at this moment we have our time, our education, and our expertise to be able to continue to educate the next group and inspire them to continue to officiate, especially in the youth levels, you know, the grassroots levels, where that's pretty much where a lot of the referee abuse and assault begins, which is why we lose a lot of referees at that level.
Christina, obviously, you know, you mentioned it, this comes close to home for you as well. So give me an idea, based on the deal that they got versus the deal that they would have wanted, scale of 1 to 10, how good of a deal is this, considering it's going now for the next 7 years?
So I'm going to step out of the personal concept and I'm going to put my legal, like, strategic brain side of it. I would give it a 4 personally. And the reason why is because of the length of the contract. So when we talk about 7 years, there's so much that it can occur in 7 years. And yes, is there escalators that hit, I think, the year after the World Cup? The understanding is yes, there is. But to put this much into consideration and to say that you can't budget for transportation costs, and therefore that's why you can't, you know, green light anything with regard to increase the transportation. These referees are doing the exact same as players. You want them to arrive fresh. You want them to arrive ready to officiate a game instead of, you know, getting the standard seat next to the toilet. So for me, I just think this contract extension is a bit too long, but you do have to give something up in negotiations. That's why I say, you know, any kind of settlements, any kind of agreements, if no one's happy, that means it's ultimately the right one. But that's kind of where I would place it from just a strategic business aspect of it. And so it wasn't unanimously agreed upon, but we wouldn't call it essentially a super majority because that's usually 75% beyond, but it met the CBA requirements to be approved. So it wasn't unilaterally agreed, but it met the majority that was needed to move forward.
4.
Wow. That's,
4.
That's
now I want to know your personal opinion.
You can text me after that.
The legal, let's just go personal. So would you say, Christina, then, with all this, everything that we've just discussed there, there is still not a great relationship between the referee union and MLS then? Would you say there's still friction there where both sides don't really trust each other, respect each other to a high level? In your personal,
I think this
opinion.
Always happens in union negotiations. I love that. I'm putting back my non-personal opinion. But no, truly, when it comes to union and negotiation, and Brian can also allude to that, right? When you have this relationship, and that's like always this incredibly unique dynamic. When you're talking about, you know, at the table with your employees and telling them, no, we don't think you're valued at that, or we don't think we want to invest money into this group or into this category or into this thing that you as an employee define as something that's important for your success and performance on the field for the product, naturally there's going to be friction involved with that. So the next phase after mediated settlement agreements is for, the culture to be addressed and for, you know, some hard feelings to be put aside. And I think in these situations, it's incredibly important that people put, you know, emotions and energy and ego to the side and try to move forward strategically and with more clarity moving forward. And the irony of that is I always say that I'm pretty good at that just because I have been a referee since I was 10 years old, that I can disassociate my personal feelings from, you know, an objective position. So it's a unique situation to ask both referee administrators as well as referees to get to that same situation.
Christina, last one for you. Is the expectation that pro referees will be back at their jobs come this weekend in Major League Soccer?
That is the expectation, currently not yet solidified, but that is the expectation that this weekend you will see the PRO referees returning to the field unless they strategically have blocked their calendar this weekend. But aside from that, you should see them this weekend.
All right, great stuff, Christina Uncle. Thanks for taking the time to join us today and talk more about this. I know, lots
to get into
there.
Personal, 4. Christina.
Yeah.
I don't want the legal representation.
That personal take, that's reserved for the
you
text thread, my friends.
Go find out.
I'm going to find out.
Go find out for us.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.